The Midday Program is on the air on the Rural Radio Network. As sunshine spreads across the midday, the Midlands, and here in the middle part of your day, we have information coming from all points of the globe. And where do we find Susan Littlefield today?
Not in Surprise.
No? Surprise, I'm in Manhattan, huh?
I know. I'm in Manhattan at Kansas State University. They have a K-State has a Ag Lenders Conference going on today. So right now, all the bankers that are here, and it's a packed house, they're learning more about crop insurance and some things that are going to be changed within that. We're going to come back after lunch and learn more about land values and other issues happening in agriculture to let them do their jobs better. So we're going to have some more stuff on the road later today, and then, of course, the rest of the week within our farm news. Speaking of farm news, coming up at 12:19, Bryce is going to talk with Tamara Jackson about late-season diseases that you might be seeing within your soybean crop. At 12:45, Farmers for Free Trade held a huge news conference yesterday in Washington, D.C., as negotiations are underway today for NAFTA. And then at 1:17, Bruce Anderson is going to be talking about freezes and your alfalfa, since many areas got their first frost in the overnight. So that's some of the things happening on the midday from the farm department.
All right. Boy, they have a really nice facility for that down. Give all our best to all of those down at Manhattan, okay?
I will. Lots of seas of purple down here, let me tell you.
I should think there would be. Thank you. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate it. And we've got Jason Jorgensen over here on sports. Anything about the wild kittens? Cats? Wild cats?
Not to rub salt in the wound, but I saw a great tweet yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know why they came up with this. But Tom Osborne in his coaching career at Nebraska, he was 50-0 all time against schools from the state of Kansas. I mean, you think about that compared to the issues they're having now.
Yeah, but, well, you know, that was then, this is now.
That is true, but that's just amazing. Hey, coming up in sports, we will talk some NSAA high school softball. Girls with a pretty decent day to get the tournament underway in Hastings. We all know it's been a whole lot worse than that for state softball, so today, pretty good. Class C first-round winners included Fairbury, Bishop Newman, Arlington, and Malcolm. Also, we'll talk some Husker volleyball. They have a big match on the road tonight at Wisconsin. Huskers are fourth in the country. Wisconsin is 11th. When Wisconsin was in Lincoln, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, Huskers had a battle back and win that 1-5. We'll hear from Nebraska setter Kelly Hunter about that. Also, there's two big baseball games today. Cubs will try to finish things off against Washington again, unless Mother Nature gets in the road. And then Cleveland, New York, and boy, Cleveland lost this. This would be so Cleveland. I mean, it really would after they went, you know, months with losing a game or two, and then to choke it away against the Yankees.
Well, it's the Yankees. You know, anything can happen with the pinstripes.
Maybe it'll be like Major League the movie and the Indians win.
Let's hope. All right. Very good. Thanks, Jason. And over here we have Dave Schroeder sitting in the business.
Yes. Desk. Good day to you. Stock indices are barely nudging in midday trading on Wall Street as gains for technology companies are offset by losses elsewhere. The S&P is at 2,550. The NASDAQ up 4 points. And the Dow did close at a record high yesterday, as a matter of fact. So we're going to keep that in mind and have more information coming up on the markets and also oil trains. We'll talk about that as well.
What trains?
Oil trains. O-I-L.
All right. Yeah, we'll be listening with interest. It's your full couple of hours of information in the middle of the day on midday. I always love it when the networks come on and say that our regular correspondent, our anchor, our, in this case, weather guy, Paul Perkins, is on assignment. And what that really means today is he's at lunch. He is taking lunch out in, of course, our Rural Radio Network pickup truck, and he is getting ready to deliver a harvest break to some lucky harvester out there at this time. South winds and sunshine. He did leave me something to read, though, here. So this is how it works, and imagine this in the voice and expertise of Paul Perkins. South winds and sunshine today. Warming temperatures into the 60s as the high pressure slides east and low pressure develops to the west. The southerly winds overnight will keep temperatures about 10 degrees milder than last night. And that's a good thing because those of you with your scrapers in hand probably didn't necessarily want to do that this morning, but it's just a fact of life around here. Tomorrow will be, however, one of the warmest days of the next seven in advance of the cold front to the northwest, so that'll give you a good opportunity to get rid of your credit card scraper there and get one that really means business as temperatures cool down on Friday and into the weekend with the passage of a couple of cold fronts. The low pressure then tracks east on Friday night through Saturday. That'll bring us a chance of probably light rain, an isolated thunderstorm or two is going to be possible, but nothing too widespread, nothing too severe in those thunderstorms. The high pressure will pick up some strength to the west early next week for a warm westerly downslope flow, and that means mainly dry weather. And a long-term forecast, of course, is coming out, and that will show a high likelihood of warmer than normal temperatures for both Nebraska and Kansas for Monday, all the way through October 24th. That sounds about the right amount of time for you to finish up harvest. Conditions for the harvest will be favorable on the long term, with below normal rainfall expected for both the Cornhusker and the Sunflower states on Monday all the way through October 24th. This weather is being brought to you by Holdridge Irrigation, your Reinke dealer. A drier forecast for the Midwest harvest with no change in the prospect for rain in central Brazil. Those both key items for commodity traders today. The weather forecast is calling for a drier pattern to form during the next week to 10 days, and that'll offer better conditions for both field and crop drying along with harvest progress. The progress is around 2 weeks behind the five-week average in the Midwest. It's right near the average pace for the eastern portions of the crops. We'll be looking for the recent southern rains providing favorable soil moisture to germinate and early development of the winter wheat crop. The rains have slowed the planting process there, but conditions for planting will be improving during the week. Cold weather earlier this week will slow some development of that early planted wheat, at least for a time. The Delta, with no significant concerns for seasonal field work right now, harvesting of soybeans, cotton, and peanuts, and planting of winter wheat should continue with a little delay there. Southeastern U.S. crop areas, drier trend through the rest of this week. That'll offer some better conditions for the harvest after the recent very heavy rainfall due to the tropical weather system that moved through. And the northern plains, mostly dry, seasonal temperatures will favor the harvest. Elsewhere, central Brazil has seen a turn to hot, dry conditions, which appear to be in place for the next week. And that trend will reduce soil moisture again in Brazil, increasing the risk for the recently planted soybeans. Meanwhile, heavy rain over the southern areas of Brazil will cause some delay in field work. Across Argentina, a dry forecast offering beneficial conditions for crop planting. The drier trend welcome after all the heavy rain in September. Recent rainfall in western and central Ukraine favoring soil moisture for winter wheat, and southeastern Ukraine through southern Russia now notably drier, in need of precipitation for the winter grains. And in Australia, the major wheat areas of the west have seen favorable rainfall with beneficial impact. South Australia and Victoria are drier, with the yield of the wheat likely to be reducing. New South Wales and Queensland facing chronic dryness, and they are in urgent need of some soaking rains to ward off any significant yield loss. Our forecast is going to show high temperatures today for Nebraska, hitting once again upwards of that 60s for the central and east and near 70 for the western Nebraska areas. Your ag weather brought to you by Holdridge Irrigation. When you need weather anytime, it's KRVN.com.
Across much of the area has producers slowed down. I'm Shaylee Peters on the Rural Radio Network as we take a check of ag news here. Prolonged wet weather and recent rain could have an effect in the corn fields. Bryce Duskett has more for us.
Tamer Jackson-Zims, Nebraska Extension plant pathologist and professor at the University of Nebraska, says that late season diseases and stock quality could be an issue.
Stock quality and stalk rot diseases increasing quickly, and the potential for lodging at harvest or even before harvest. And then if there were any ear rot diseases out there, then those may also become worse.
Tamara Jackson-Zims adds that the best way to evaluate is to be in the fields.
Well, for stalk quality, the easiest thing I think to do is to do what we call the push or a pinch test. And if you just go down through their row and push on those plants, and I would push on them about shoulder height, and if they don't snap back upright and instead kind of bend over below the ear, then you know that some of those plants are going to be at risk for lodging, whether it's due to high wind before harvest.
Jackson-Zims says you should test at least 100 plants throughout the field. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskett.
Approval of new offers made under the Continuous Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP, sign-up has again been temporarily suspended until sometime later in fiscal 2018, according to USDA, and the process of pending offers made before September 30th is currently underway. USDA is accepting all pending continuous CRP enrollment offers that were made beginning on May 4th, 2017 through September 30th, 2017. However, USDA noted that the Pollinator Habitat Initiative offers are being declined as the acreage enrollment goal for that effort has been met. USDA data showed that as of August, 441,872 acres had been enrolled under the pollinator effort, which had a 450,000-acre allocation. CRP data has indicated that sign-up 50 for the continuous CRP effort fiscal 2017 included 1.107 million acres being approved. But since May 4th, offers were taken in by USDA but not approved, as the agency has sought to keep the acreage below the 24 million acre cap imposed via the 2014 Farm Bill. And advances in ag practices are apparent in most ag industries. Bruce Garter has one example.
The pork industry is no exception to technological advances, as Pat McGonigal, CEO of Iowa Pork, explains.
Two things that I've seen, and I've been involved in the pork industry a number of years, but it's not only the technology that's been brought to the farms, whether it's how we're treating our nutrients and manure, how we're feeding the animal, the food safety principles that we use. So not only those kinds of technologies, but it's also the care, where we've made improvements in buildings and fans and ventilation and all of those types of things. That's really provided I believe, a much better environment for the pig than what we used to have in the past. And I really see the commitment from producers to do better each day. And how do we make a better environment for the pig and the people that surround us?
That's Pat McGonigal. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the Iowa Pork Producers Association. I'm Bruce Gorder on the Rural Radio Network.
And finally, in other ag news, Bill Bullard, RCAF USA CEO, and Tatum Lee, RCAF Development Director, will be in Nebraska next week, hosting meetings October 19th in Valentine and October 20th in Brewster. More details on that can be found at ruralradio.com. That's a check of your ag news. I'm Shaylee Peters on the Rural Radio Network.
Various stock root diseases have been confirmed in samples from cornfields across Nebraska. Good afternoon on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Bryce Duskett. With the recent excessive rain amounts falling across most of the Midwest and prolonged wet weather keeping people out of the field, it's a good reminder to scout for stock root diseases in cornfields. Tamara Jackson-Zims, Nebraska Extension plant pathologist, joins me now on the phone to discuss some of these diseases in corn, but also to talk about what we should be looking out for this time of year in all the fields. Tamara, to begin, give us an overview. What are you seeing in the fields right now?
Well, certainly. And, you know, we've been talking about this for several weeks, and people that may have initially evaluated fields and felt pretty good about the quality, it might find that the recent rain and prolonged wet weather may actually have hastened some problems. And in particular, I'm concerned about stalk quality and stalk rot diseases increasing quickly, and the potential for lodging at harvest or even before harvest. And then if there were any ear rot diseases out there, then those may also become worse, and they may not be expecting that. And it might mean that people should get out and check those fields again before deciding which fields to harvest first.
And if people are heading out to those fields and looking, what should they be looking for specifically? Can they do any tests there?
Yes. Well, for stalk quality, the easiest thing I think to do is to do what we call the push or a pinch test. And if you just go down through their row and push on those plants and I would push on them about shoulder height, and if they don't snap back upright and instead kind of bend over below the ear, then you know that some of those plants are going to be at risk for lodging, whether it's due to high wind before harvest or whatever. But that's probably the quickest way. The pinch test is just what it sounds like, but it requires you to do a lot of bending over and reaching down and pinching those stalks between the lower internodes where they're more prone to damage. And if they do run out and want to look at evaluating stalk quality, I think it's necessary to push on at least 100 different stalks in various parts of the field to really get an idea of where the problem areas might be.
It's been kind of a unique growing season here late as people are trying to get in the fields. A lot of people are seeing some flooding in their fields. Anything else that they should be looking for as they're getting out and harvesting, maybe related to the weather or not, just things we should be looking out for?
What I would want to keep in the back of my mind is just to try to remember which fields had which problem. And that might help them during seed selection, during the winter months, and working with their seed agronomist and trying to position hybrids better that may perform better on some of those fields where they may or may not have some chronic problems.
That's all good advice. Anything else you want to add while I have you on the phone here?
I guess one last thing. I guess this year we've heard more about Goss's bacterial wilt and blight, and probably more than we've heard in the last 4 or maybe even 5 years in Nebraska. And I think it's a good reminder that the pathogen is still out there. It survives very well from year to year, infective residue. But also that resistant hybrids are still the best way for us to fight that disease. And if you have a history of that disease, you still have it in your field, and we need to be diligent about continuing to select resistant hybrids for those areas.
Very good. Thank you for that information, Tamara. Tamara Jackson-Zibbs, Nebraska Extension plant pathologist. To learn more, you can log on to cropwatch.unl.edu and search for the Stock Root Disease in Nebraska Cornfields article. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskin.
It's midday on the Rural Radio Network. It's time to check sports with Jason Jorgensen.
Hey, thanks, Dirk. Well, the NSAA State High School softball tournament is underway today in Hastings. In Class C earlier today, Bishop Newman beat Auburn 13-7. It was Fairbury over Fillmore Central, Exeter Milligan 15-5. Arlington edged Shadron 2-1, and defending state champion Malcolm beat Guardian Angels Central Catholic 11-0. Now, Class A is playing at this time. Class B will play this afternoon at 2. Fourth-ranked Nebraska travels to 11th-ranked Wisconsin tonight. Head coach John Cook likes having this match in the middle of the week compared to the first matchup that was on a Saturday night.
Well, we have 2 days to prepare now, as opposed to, you know, you're trying to prepare for them early in the week, and then you're playing Minnesota in a huge match. So, you know, that took a lot of our focus. So we got 2 days now to really work on Wisconsin and hopefully have a really good game plan and our players really understand it and can follow it.
Nebraska's 6-0 in conference action for the first time since 2011. Tonight's match starts at 8 Central Time. It's all or nothing when the Cleveland Indians host the New York Yankees in a decisive Game 5 of the AL Divisional Series tonight. Corey Kluber, considered the favorite for the AL Cy Young Award, starts for Cleveland and tries to atone for getting hit hard in Game 2. Wiley veteran CeCe Sabathia pitches for the wildcard Yankees. The Indians won twice at Progressive Field last week, then lost twice at Yankee Stadium. They haven't dropped 3 in a row since August 1st. The winner meets up with Houston in the AL Championship Series, set to begin on Friday. And the World Series champion Cubs try to wrap up their NL Divisional Series with a win over Washington in Game 4 at Wrigley Field this afternoon. Following Tuesday's rainout, ace Steven Strasburg could have worked on regular rest, but manager Dusty Baker says he is not going to start. Jake Arrieta starts for Chicago. In his return from a right hamstring injury, he has pitched just 10 and a third innings since the end of August. And rookie Deshaun Kizer has been replaced as Cleveland's quarterback by backup Kevin Hogan, who will be the 28th different starter for the Browns at that position since 1999. Hogan will start this week at Houston. Coach Hugh Jackson benched Kizer at halftime of Sunday's loss to the Jets for Hogan, who threw a pair of touchdown passes and seemed to do a better job of moving the offense. That is a look at sports. Have a great afternoon. I'm Jason Jorgensen. Stay tuned. More Midday is just ahead. You are listening to the Rural Radio Network.
It's sunny for the rest of the day with a high of 64. Tonight, a low of around 40. And then for Thursday, sunny once again with a high near 72. From the KRVN News Center, I'm Scott Foster. Halloween is coming up, and Friday the 13th is this week. If things that go bump in the night are to your liking, you might want to check out the Henry Museum in Cozet. Museum Director Caroline Goodrow has some opportunities to visit the reportedly haunted 150-year-old hotel. She said that she's seen the ghosts.
Yes, I have. We've used some different technologies to be able to communicate with the spirits. And actually, just the other day, we were using flashlights, and a spirit's energy can turn them on. And we asked if it was Mr. Cozad, and the light turned on, which was pretty crazy, really exciting, too.
Contact the museum for haunted tour information. She will be offering evening tours on Thursday and Friday of next week and a special tour on Friday the 13th for a limited number of people. You can find them on Facebook. The joys of owning a pet also come with the reality that someday you will have to say goodbye. A Kansas State University veterinarian and clinical professor, Susan Nelson, says euthanasia is a difficult decision and one that can be very stressful, especially if you're not sure when to proceed. She suggests keeping a log of your pet's behavior.
There'll be days when you're convinced this is time, your pet's letting you know, then they tend to rally. And so you go through this emotional roller coaster of good days and bad days. And so it can be a really hard time. So keeping that log, and then when you start seeing that there's more of those bad days than good days, is probably time.
Because of our emotional attachment and the fact that the pet's health often gradually declines, Nelson says asking a close friend or trusted family member for their opinion might be helpful. Nebraska entomologists say they're getting more calls, questions, and complaints about a little bug that packs a big bite. Minute pirate bugs become more noticeable in the fall when they move from the woods to backyards and parks in search of food. An entomologist with Nebraska Extension in Omaha says pirate bugs are less than 1/8 of an inch long, but give a surprisingly painful bite. The bugs aren't a health risk to humans because they don't feed on blood or inject venom. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a federal lawsuit challenging a Kansas law prohibiting state contractors from participating in boycotts against Israel. The ACLU filed the lawsuit Wednesday for a Wichita Public School curriculum coach. It says Esther Kuntz was denied a state teacher training contract because she wouldn't sign a statement saying that she wasn't boycotting Israel. The lawsuit says Kuntz is boycotting Israeli products because of Israel's treatment of Palestinians and that the Kansas law violates her free speech rights. The law took effect in July. Replay the game, interview, or feature you missed by catching a podcast from the front page of KRVN.com. In the News Center, I'm Scott Foster.
Social media and telling the story of agriculture has grown in popularity. Good afternoon, I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network. I met Jay Hill because of Snapchat. Somebody suggested I check him out and what he was doing on his farming operation in New Mexico. And then most recently, enlarged the farm about 2 hours away in the western part of Texas. So I caught up in the early morning hours as he was waiting to bale hay to talk about the importance of agriculture, social media, and telling the story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel, at least in my own opinion, that I live probably one of the greatest lifestyles that anybody could dream. And so for me to be able to take, you know, a 10-second or 20-second snapshot of what I do every day and put it out there just to educate people on what I do day in and day out, not only is it really cool and it really educates.
Many components come together to make farmers for free trade, included in this co-chair, Senator Max Baucus.
Thanks, Matt. And I especially want to thank you, Zippy, for your very strong support here. Farm Bureau, I must say, tell you, has been just terrific in my home state of Montana. You've got a great guy over here, John Youngblood, Youngbird. He does a really good job here. I'm joining all this very simply because from my previous job, sitting over there in China, representing the United States for a couple, 3 years over there, I couldn't see more opportunity for American agriculture, American trade, than we otherwise have. That is, China is going like gangbusters. They're doing deals with lots of other countries, trade deals, for their benefit. Australia is doing trade deals for their benefit, as is Japan, as are lots of other of Asian countries, to say nothing of countries in other parts of the world. And we Americans are not taking advantage of that opportunity. In fact, we're going the wrong direction. When we start to be down Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we say we're going to withdraw from NAFTA or CORUS, we're hurting ourselves, and we're especially hurting agriculture. I can't tell you how strongly I see other countries working very hard, much harder than we are as Americans, to promote their products, and especially agricultural products. I also believe that to be successful, you have to be bipartisan. That's why I'm very happy to join in here with Senator Lugar. I've known Senator Lugar for many years, chairman of the Senate Ag Committee for many years, so while I was chairman of the Finance Committee, and I'm just so proud that we're working together on a bipartisan basis. In my experience, if you want something done, you got to work together. You got to work as a team. You got to work on a bipartisan basis, and that's just what we're doing here. Zip, you mentioned a couple of very important statistics. A couple others are that we export half of all our major commodities. We were in a big trade surplus, that is a surplus in agriculture, unlike some other sectors, and ag trade just supports so many jobs. And I'm also happy we're doing this to kind of run, send a message counter to some of the anti-trade messages that are going around in our country. Those anti-trade messages are just flat simply wrong. We do need trade. We need more trade, not less. Trade helps America, not helps America. And that's, I just am joining because I believe strongly that our country will do really better the more we have trade agreements, and certainly agriculture is going to do better because ag is so important. In fact, more important than more people realize.
The other co-chair for Farmers for Free Trade is Senator Richard Lugar.
Let me just say that I would want to follow up with thoughts that we have to make our agricultural export sales. We have to do this because half of the acreage, as Libby pointed out, is devoted really to feeding the world. Now, the fact is that United States soybean exports this year are 17% behind last year at this stage. We're still, corn export sales are running 41% behind last year. It's a time, as a matter of fact, in which farmers, by and large, around the country, are earning less on their farms. Considerable consolidation as small farmers continue to get out of farming and their land goes to larger enterprises. This is a bipartisan effort, but it's also should be a national effort in which all the citizens of America ought to be supporting our farmers. And our farmers right now are suffering an income decline. This isn't going to last very long, we hope, but Farmers for Free Trade can make a difference. It's a grassroots organization of farmers who are suffering these downturns in terms of prices and future prices now, and likewise income losses, and yet at the same time want to continue to use the very best mechanics, the very best seed, fertilizer, agricultural processes. I say this, and I hope this is not self-serving, as a member of a farm family. I've managed a Lugar farm in Indianapolis, 604 acres, with corn and soybeans and hardwood trees now for over 50.
And for the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Zippy Duval, it was important for them to join this campaign of Farmers for Free Trade.
But we're real proud to announce our joining of this campaign. It is important for us to continue to educate the public, Capitol Hill and this administration, as to the importance of trade to agriculture, the farmers and ranchers, and the rural communities across America. The rural community depends on a strong ag economy where 20% of the farm income comes from foreign trade. And one out of every 3 acres that is planted is exported across our shores.
From the Farmers for Free Trade conference call, I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network.
Next, we talk livestock futures trading with Joe Teal, Great Plains Commodities. Joe?
Yes, sir. Definitely a mixed day in the livestock. Cattle, very mixed. Finishing mixed in the live cattle, finishing mixed to mostly lower in the feeders, but nothing exceptional. Just a few cents on either side of unchanged for everything. Kind of a waiting day, it appeared. Cutouts at noon were lower again. The cattle that traded this week here have been as high as 110, 110.50. There were 14 deliveries against the October contract, which kind of held things back, I think, too, and no appreciable sales in the country that I've heard today. So a very choppy back-and-forth day and finishing mixed. Over in the hogs, cash the leader once again, sharply higher yesterday, higher again today. That brought on a triple-digit gain out of the nearby October and higher prices all the way back through the back months. So pretty good day again for the hogs. Cutouts higher along with it. So heading into the remainder of the week, I think we're still waiting to see what the Packers and the cattle.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Teal can be reached at 800-328-0134. Now, total cattle slaughter for this week, for the first 3 days, estimated at 351,000, 9,000 more than last week, 8,000 more than a year ago. Hog slaughter, 1,389,000, 22,000 more than 1 week ago. Dewey Nelson on the World Radio Network.
Many parts of our listening area experienced the first freeze of the season last night, with cold temperatures dipping into the 20s and 30s. And with the freezing temperatures, it's important to look at how freezing affects forage. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskett. Joining me on the phone now to discuss this topic is Bruce Anderson, Extension Forage Specialist. Bruce, temperatures are dipping lower. Talk about how that all affects forage.
When we have a freeze, plants are affected in both their metabolism and their composition, and some of those changes can result in greater risk to livestock of various poisoning types of situations. When we look at some of the sorghum-related types of plants, things like Sudan grass, Milo, Ford sorghum, those types of plants, oftentimes the freezing will break up various plant cell membranes, and as a result of this breakup of membranes within the plant, the chemicals that are inside the plant get mixed together to create the prussic acid toxin, which is also called cyanide, that can be quite dangerous for the livestock. This toxin then is very rapidly available to the livestock, and if they eat a lot of this frozen material quickly, we can have some toxic losses there. The good news with it, though, is that the cyanide gas very quickly starts to dissipate into the air and disappears, so after about 3 to 5 days, the risk of having any prussic acid poisoning goes down a great deal, and we can graze these types of feeds much more safely after that.
Bruce, how does this affect alfalfa? Talk about that with the late season last cutting here. What should people be looking at there?
Oftentimes, I tell people that you've got to be really careful about looking at the thermometer, because the thermometer may tell you one thing, whether it's up at your house or even if it's out in the field. The most important thermometer is the plant itself, and looking to see how the plant has reacted to whatever temperature conditions it has experienced. When we get here into mid-October, oftentimes an alfalfa plant can experience 25 degrees, even for a couple of hours, and still not be affected greatly by that low temperature. And so responding to those kinds of conditions, either with cutting or grazing or other kind of management, may not be appropriate at that point. So first take a look at the field and see if the cold temperatures have actually caused the alfalfa plant to bend over, to start wilting, for some of the leaves later on in the day or the next day to start drying up and becoming dormant for the rest of the season. Those will be conditions that we need to look at to determine whether taking a harvest at that point is appropriate because the plants then are killed for the year, or grazing would start to become safer in a few days after the plants start to wilt down, or do we need to wait longer?
Bruce, is there anything else you want to add on this topic?
We need to be careful about not rushing to judgment based on the thermometer. We need to look at the plant and see how the plant is reacting to the temperature.
Bruce Anderson, Nebraska Extension Forage Specialist. Bruce, thank you so much for that information. And for more, you can log on to ruralradio.com.
Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network. In a grain market that drifted again, at least for corn and winter wheat futures, with us is John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago and publisher of the newsletter This Week in Grain. They seem reluctant to make any big moves one way or the other leading up to a report, John.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think you can see the protection positions being put on by a lot of the bigger money. I've even seen a few guys who I follow online putting out recommendations to buy puts here. I'm going to take the opposite tack. I think the market maybe gets a little bit of bad news tomorrow, but I think it'll come back. I think there's a lot of fun money looking to buy this thing in the end of the year. If you look at the outside markets and then if you take the row crops out of it, you'd wonder what's going on. Everything from, you know, silver and gold to the livestock markets to copper, OJ, sugar, they've all taken off here in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I think you're going to see some movement here come a break. Now, the question is, where do you buy it? If it falls to 335, you know, you could easily see 325, and I think, you know, there's no picking bottoms here. There's no perfect way to do it, but I think if you get down here, and we're trading sub 340, we've been below 340 over the last decade for probably a total of a month, and I just think the market's going to come back at some point. The question that you ask yourself is really, if we rally 20 cents, what's the basis going to do? And that's my point. I really think you're better off in the paper or being on the flat price future side of it than the basis, because I can see the market maybe rallying tomorrow 10, 15 cents, and the basis widens out.
You think that might happen for soybeans too?
No, I think beans are a little bit of a different animal. I think the demand is there for soybeans. I actually been kind of digging into some things here and think we could see maybe a little bit of a weaker or a smaller number than we've seen. And you throw in the fact that the grain stocks report was a little bullish for beans, and you could have a carryout number that's, you know, 30, 40 million less than where we were in the last report anyway. But beans are really all about South America right now, and word came out today, China canceled a couple of shipments of Brazilian beans. It sounds like quality is going to be an issue, and the U.S. it represents the quality of you know, any beans you want to buy here for the next couple of months.
We're having a hard time, though, reaching a bottom in this wheat market, at least for winter wheat futures.
Yeah, I think wheat is just in a little bit of, I'd say, whipping post mode again. The funds got a little long there, thinking that maybe we would be dry in the you know, Texas Panhandle all the way up into Kansas. Weather changed. It's now almost too wet. Seedings are really slow. I think we've drilled about 25% of the acreage right now. That is very behind. Now, I wouldn't think that's much of a concern at this point, but I do think as we get into, you know, late October, early November, the markets might start to take notice of that.
Thanks, John. John Payne. You can get more information by going to danielsagmarketing.com. Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network.